for Wednesday, May 16th, 2007. We have two bills on our agenda today, and we are going to go in reverse order and begin with a public hearing on Senate Bill 484A. I open a public hearing on Senate Bill 484A. Steve, will you please give us a brief description of Senate Bill 484A?
Thank you, Vice Chair Bonamici. Senate Bill 484A requires arbitration and court actions for consumer contracts to be held within the state of Oregon, notwithstanding contract clause to the contrary, provides for striking the clause as remedy, provides for attorney fees against parties seeking to enforce clause, allows parties to appear by phone, exempts real estate contracts.
Thank you, Steve. And first, we have signed up Linda Johansson from the Oregon State Bar Debtor Creditor Section.
Welcome. My name is Linda Johansson. I'm an attorney in private practice in Portland and a member of the Debtor Creditor Section. The Debtor Creditor Section of the Oregon State Bar is a group of attorneys, about 687, who represent a combination of debtors and creditors. Senate Bill 484A in its current form is problematic for our section for a couple of reasons. First of all, it doesn't just simply say that an arbitration clause requires any matter to be brought in the county in which the consumer resides, which we think would resolve whatever problems there are. But the first thing that's going to happen is there's going to be a court proceeding to try to determine whether or not the clause in the contract can be revoked. We think that this puts a burden on the court system to hear and determine the revocation matter, and it's unnecessary. Secondly, it changes the current evidence code and rules about in-person testimony and shifts the burden to the person who wants to have telephone testimony to prove why there's cause for having that. We think that the current evidence code should be left alone. Most of the judges in the state of Oregon don't allow testimony by telephone, and it's usually within the judge's discretion. Third, the bill provides that there will be attorney fees allowed to a consumer, but there's no reciprocity component of this. So if the consumer is not the prevailing party in revoking a term of the contract, there should be reciprocal attorney fees paid to the party who is successful in opposing the revocation of the contract. There may be federal statutes that preempt this piece of legislation. For example, there's a Federal Arbitration Act. As a policy matter under Oregon law, we have mandatory arbitration in all matters under $50,000. So it seems inconsistent to be saying that we don't want arbitration proceedings to be going forward in Oregon. We think that there is also a problem with regard to large businesses who do business with consumers in Oregon, because they're not going to know about this proceeding until they've done business with consumers in Oregon, then all of a sudden they're dragged into court to have a revocation proceeding. We think the problems with the bill can be solved by simply saying that any arbitration proceeding in a consumer contract must be brought in the county in which the consumer resides, and that would be enough to resolve the problem.
Are there any questions? Representative Riley.
Thank you. And would that stand up, the fact that we require the arbitration to be held in the county where the consumer resides, and would there not be a federal law that supersedes that?
No, actually, under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which is federal legislation, it currently provides that any action by a collection agency or an attorney to collect a debt against a consumer must be brought in the county in which the consumer resides. So it would be consistent with what's already on the federal legislation.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Say a little bit more about the problems with allowing parties to appear by phone, please.
Some of our courts are not very well equipped for telephone testimony. In particular, judges don't really like that because they want to be able to read people's faces and body language and determine who's lying and who's not. So it is not a common practice in Oregon courts to allow testimony by telephone at this point in time. And that may change in the future, but by shifting the burden to show cause as to why there should not be testimony allowed by telephone, you're taking away the discretion of the judge as to whether or not they want to have telephone testimony or live testimony. It also seems to us that if you're going to be proceeding in the local court where the consumer resides, it shouldn't be burdensome to allow to have them come into court to testify in person.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? I'll ask one. I noticed that line 2 says this is relating to unlawful trade practices, but I couldn't figure out where in the ORS this was supposed to reside. Have you been able to determine that?
Actually, Representative Bonamici, thank you. That is an error because this bill started out to say that it would be an unlawful trade practice to include a mandatory arbitration provision in a consumer contract, and that has been dropped from the bill.
Thank you. So is it your understanding that this is not just going to apply to consumer contracts?
It does now apply to consumer contracts only and specifically says that in the bill.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much
for your
testimony. And next I will call up as a panel John Chandler, Jim Gardner, and Harlan Levy. Welcome.
Thank you.
Looks like it may be the two of you at least for now. So.
Thank you. John said he had to run to a meeting. He's going to get back as soon as he can.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever wants to go first, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner, and I am appearing today for, among others, Microsoft. Just briefly, I kind of got pressed into service on this bill on the other side when I got a call from the State System of Higher Education saying that if this bill passes in its original form, all of the enterprise agreements we have with Microsoft will be void since they all have and they'll be constitute unlawful trade practices since they all have arbitration clauses in it. Started to probe into that a little bit more, and it became apparent that this, as originally drafted, this bill would apply to all commercial arbitration clauses. Recognizing the absurdity, I think would be the right word, of doing that at the commercial level, the committee on the Senate side did amend the bill to restrict it to consumer contracts. It still presents a problem. Some of the problems were addressed by the previous witness. There is, to some degree, to some indeterminate degree, this bill will be preempted by the federal arbitration law. No one, I don't think, can foresee precisely how broad that preemption will be until it's litigated, probably litigated repeatedly, which is going to result in, expenditure of funds both on the defense and the plaintiff side. And second, it really contravenes a policy that the prior witness also referred to, which has been over the years to encourage alternative dispute resolution, whether it is arbitration, conciliation, other forms of non-judicial resolution of lawsuits and complaints. And I think if a court gets this bill and compares it with the prior provision that was referred to, they're going to have to decide to what degree this implicitly repeals or overrides that prior provision, because it's certainly not clear in the bill itself. I do understand what the concern is of those who are proponents of the bill, and I have a suggestion. I think that this is an ideal topic for you folks to refer to the Oregon Law Commission for consideration during the interim, because it's a superficially simple issue, but there are underlying complexities that I don't think really there's time to address this session, and they involve the scope of federal preemption. Another issue is the cost impact on the courts, not simply the perhaps what might show up in a fiscal impact, but to what degree is this going to push disputes that are currently resolved by arbitration into the judicial system. No one can forecast that with any degree of precision, but it is going to have a cost impact. And at a time when, as you folks know better than me, we have been really neglectful of our responsibilities to fund the judicial system and judicial salaries, it's something you ought to think about very carefully. And again, if it seems appropriate, perhaps refer it to the Law Commission for further study.
Good afternoon, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Harlan Levy here representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. We, too, have some significant concerns about this bill for many of the reasons you've already heard from the previous witnesses. We do appreciate the fact that the bill was amended. The sponsor of the bill attempted to deal with some of our concerns. However, the drafting does not fix the problems that we had. For example, the section line 19, subsection 5, attempts to remove contracts for the sale or lease of real property from the bill. However, that is not defined. A contract for the sale of real property is left undefined. That could raise several questions. For example, does that include an earnest money agreement? Does that include a land sale contract? What exactly does that mean? Additionally, what if the contract for the sale of real property also includes some personal property? In many cases, when a buyer buys a house, they may, as part of the deal, also buy the TV set, the big screen TV as part of the house, or a tractor to mow the lawn. And so on and so forth. So if there's personal property as part of the transaction, again, that could require the dispute to go into litigation. And again, we're hoping that any of these disputes do not go into litigation. I mean, they're perfect for arbitration. That's why that clause is in many of these real estate contracts. There are other problems with this bill. For example, the listing agreements that my members sign with sellers usually contain arbitration clauses within those contracts, and so on and so forth. So again, this bill is very broad. It leaves a lot of definitions undefined, and we would agree with Mr. Gardner that this is something that the Oregon Law Commission might want to take a look at during the interim if there really is a problem out there with consumers being forced into unfriendly and distant arbitration forums. There could be a solution, but this is not the bill for that solution. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Girod.
Oh, thank you, Chair Holvey. Well, the question I have is, it was sponsored by the Committee on Commerce. Who was the group, or where was who was pushing this bill to start with?
Mr. Chair, Representative Girod, you know, that's a really good question. And you'll notice, I think, that I'm not sure if the full sign-up is in front of the committee, but there are strangely no proponents here. I think that there were a group of witnesses who did have some concerns about distant venues. That was the principal testimony that as my colleague indicated, that is perhaps a legitimate concern. But I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. Further questions, Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to see you.
Thank you. It's good to be seen.
Mr. Levy, you said, quote, it leaves definitions undefined. And the frightening thing is, I actually understand what you mean by that. But my question is, in every statute that where the term real property exists currently in law, it's defined in the bill? Or would this be the only bill that uses the term real property and doesn't define it explicitly?
Chair Holby, Representative Galizio, the terms that we believe would need definition in this bill is the clause contract for the sale or lease of real property. Does that include an earnest money agreement? Does that include a land sale contract? Does that include any one of the other types of agreements that can be used to convey property between two parties? We would ask that if this bill was going to be fixed, it would need some clarity for that definition.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much. Next up, I'd like to have John Chandler. Looks like he's ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, Oregon Homebuilder Association. I apologize for not being in the room when you called my name the first time. I was up in the majority leader's office on another matter. I did not hear the realtor's testimony. I suspect ours is very similar, with one important distinction. We shared these concerns on the Senate side, and the attempt in the engrossed version of Senate Bill 44 to write real estate out. We appreciate the effort. We're not sure it got all the way out. Our concern involves, when it talks about the contract for sale or lease of real property, does that cover construction? Does that cover remodeling? Does that cover the goods and services used in a construction project or remodeling project? And part of our concern on the technical side is, when, as this committee knows far better than the other committee in this building, this session we've had oodles and gobs of bills dealing with construction defect and the rights of consumers and the claims process and insurance and warranty and all of that coming through this committee, amending various sections of the ORS and setting up authority for the Construction Contractors Board or the Building Codes Division, and then along a provision of this sort that sets up a different process potentially. It's not clear at all to us how that would correlate or if it would correlate with the authority of the CCB, if it's in fact even covered. And as with previous witnesses, we're not necessarily trying to get in the way of the bill so much as wanting to make sure it's clarified as it relates to our industry. If you're doing a contract for sale of a home, is that covered by the exemption for sale or lease of real property, or is it a separate beast that would then be covered by the consumer protection require or the provision of Section 1, Sub 1? It's simply not clear. And again, we appreciate the Senate side trying to address that. We don't believe it got all the way addressed. And if the bill continues to be worked, we'd certainly like to be part of any further conversations in clarifying to whom this applies, under what circumstances. Otherwise, it's going to be awfully problematic for us.
Thank you. Questions of Mr. Chandler? Representative Gerard.
Real quick question. Binding arbitration is usually part of real estate deals. This bill seems to go after binding arbitration, but in a more limited capacity than what it originally was meant to be. You're fairly favorable of binding arbitration clauses, are you not?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. McGraw, absolutely. I haven't reviewed all of my members' contracts for construction, obviously, but the ones I have, almost all of them do have some sort of arbitration clause. And in fact, in conversations we've had with this body and other venues, that's certainly a much more efficient way to handle disputes than trial, particularly when it's something that can be raised during the course of construction and resolved quickly. You also run into the issue, and I'm sure others have testified on this, of form contracts being used, which are fairly common, or the contract being used for the windows in a structure or other components of a structure that would have an arbitration clause that tags along with the main or incorporated up into the main contract for construction. So we like arbitration as a possible remedy. I think our consumers do as well, because if there is a dispute, it's less confrontational. And again, I'll point out that ties back into some of the bills that you folks considered earlier this session on construction defect and how to deal with those, where the issue of arbitration is on the table, and also as it relates to the CCB's authority, the Construction Contractors Board authority. So those are the kind of things we would like to see clarified. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chandler, you were not in the room when Ms. Johansson testified from the Oregon State Bar, and she said, in fact, and also in her written testimony, that it may be appropriate to allow an Oregon consumer in a contract dispute to require arbitration in Oregon. Would you have a problem with a change like that, where this bill might be changed to address the location of an arbitration rather than leaving it so broad?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonamici, I don't believe I would on just thinking off the top of my head here. The concern I would have goes to the clarification I was talking about. If we buy windows from Acme Window Company and there's a contract and a warranty and other provisions that go along with the purchase of the windows that gets rolled up into the construction, that might be awfully interesting to see if there's a claim specifically involving the failure of the window, how you handle if there's an arbitration clause there that may or may not be covered by this bill and has a venue chose someplace else. In principle, no. When I was practicing law, I had a client that stipulated the venue in Wichita, Kansas for binding arbitration. If nothing else, it ought to require the venue be a cool place, seems to me. If there's a task force on that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to be part of it to define.
Yeah, I can think of a cool place to send you.
Thanks for volunteering. Any other questions from the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chandler, I appreciate the concerns that you have for your industry and your willingness to keep working at this. Were you in the room when we talked about, as one option, we suggested sending this to the Oregon Law Center? Did you hear that part?
I did not.
Do you have any reaction to the idea? Thank you. It's been pointed out to me very helpfully that Mr. Gardner is the one that suggested that maybe this could go to the Oregon Law Center for an interim study. Just wanted your reaction to that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gillum, that sounds like a dandy idea.
Follow up, Representative Gillum.
Dandy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's in the point.
You're one of the few other people that uses that word. Dandy. I wanted to ask you one other thing. Are you a registered Oregon voter?
Yes, sir.
And how do you feel about your representation so far this session?
Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased. I think I have the finest representative in the state.
That's all. Thank you.
Letter high floater there. Meaning no offense to anybody that isn't from House, just whatever we're in. 18.
The 70s, right.
I don't know if that's going to help you in this cause. Further questions of Mr. Chandler? Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you. I really have a question of Representative Bonamici. Could I just ask John, and he could ask her?
Representative Bonamici, do you yield to a question?
I may, but I'll give it my best shot, Representative. Oh, okay. Mr. Chandler, would you ask Representative Bonamici if what this means on line 9, more dilatory than a judicial forum?
I'm not touching that one.
This is not plain language, is it?
No.
Okay.
Representative Nelson, it's my understanding that the provisions in lines 8 and 9, in fact, in that whole paragraph, means that the consumer can revoke or get rid of an arbitration provision, for example, or any alternative dispute provision, if the consumer can show that it's less convenient, more costly, or more dilatory. There would be
dilatory
more...
Dilatory is the word.
Oh, okay. Foot dragging, it would take more time, people would try to slow things down than in a judicial forum.
Sound like the home builders.
Okay, I follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Well, you know, I think I would agree with the previous people who've testified, including Mr. Chandler, that this needs some plain talk in it. And maybe you could get with Mr. Riley and Representative Riley and change some of this to be more appropriate.
Further questions of Mr. Chandler? Mr. Chairman, I got one for you before you get away.
Yes, sir.
So I'm gathering from your testimony and from Harlan's, and I apologize for missing some of the earlier testimony, that the main concern would be focused around real estate, real property.
Mr. Chairman,
And it looks like the intent of this bill is to exclude that, but you brought some good points about you buy a window and then you install it. How does that work? Do you have concerns in this bill outside of...
Mr. Chairman...
including real estate and construction?
Well, by my association perspective, it clearly focuses on that narrow range. As a member of the bar, I am concerned about the breadth of the bill, frankly, on other issues. No one's paying me to worry about that. I think that there's, anytime you're changing one section of the law without respect, where there's already existing law, whether it be the Contractors Board or the Uniform Trade Practices Act or other areas, you risk confusion by simply plunking down one set of remedies or one set of procedures without at least tying it into how it fits in with the other provisions that are already extant. But certainly from my professional standpoint, we understood from talking to the proponents in the Senate and as the bill was on its way over here before the dash and gross got done, that the intention was to take real estate out. And so obviously my concern today is primarily on how that would relate to not just real estate sale, but home building and remodeling in particular.
Thank you. No further questions. Appreciate you coming before this committee and giving us your point of view.
I want to make one more comment, if I could. I know we're not in work session, but can I just clarify my previous remarks?
Certainly. Representative Bonamici.
There is a lot of ambiguity in here, and I don't know if that section that I was discussing in response to Representative Nelson's question also would apply to a contract that would require a consumer to assert a claim in a court in another state, for example. So it's very vague. It's a very vague bill, and I think it was probably intended to address arbitration clauses, but there's a lot of ambiguity.
Well, I have a few more people signed up to testify, so why don't we invite them up, and maybe they have a different perspective on this bill, and maybe not. Julie Brandis and Tom Gallagher.
Oh, I would guess not.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, just so you know, the last time Tom and I were on the stand together, it lasted for 45 minutes. So.
We won't let that happen.
We'll try to abbreviate. For your record, I am Julie Brandis with Associated Oregon Industries. Just to recap some of the points that you have heard, and I think Representative Bonamici has also added some of the concerns that the broader business community has, that there is some ambiguities and vagueness in this legislation. And we are, many contracts have, many of those in this business community have been, we have been encouraged to use alternative dispute resolution, such as binding arbitration, as opposed to utilizing the courts. And that's for very good reasons, because we want our courts focused on the most important matters. And then we are also concerned to the degree that this law would be preempted by federal law. And that's exactly what Mr. Gardner suggested, that we take a look at this through the Oregon Law Commission. That's exactly what the Oregon Law Commission was established to do, was to take a look at problems that may be existing in the courts or through contracts, and try to figure out the best solution to this. Our membership is very diverse, so I can't speak to this, how it impacts one industry versus another. But our diverse membership is also, you know, a national membership, not AOY's national membership, but they have national contracts that they use nationally. And so we wonder, we have concerns about how that might apply. We did testify in opposition to the Senate, and that was a very broad-based bill, and we recognize that this is a pared-down version. I will note to you that when we sent this out to our members our leading issues, our weekly leading issues, it did generate more responses than just about any other piece of legislation we've worked on this this session. That, of course, was a Senate version. When I sent this out to a handful of people yet last night to say this bill is up tomorrow, what we heard back was, we need some more time to look at this. Has the bar looked at this? We think there's some unintended consequences And so, again, I would just reiterate what Mr. Gardner said, that this really does lend itself to the Oregon Law Commission. And when the proponents on the Senate side testified, I understood their concerns, but I'm not quite sure this broad-based type of legislation is necessarily needed to fix their problems.
Thank you. Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, perhaps give you a slightly different perspective here. I represent the Oregon Auto Dealers Association, and while we don't have binding arbitration clauses in our contracts per se, when you sign your forms and so forth with the manufacturer warranty and others, you're liable to sign a form contract that sets up a forum for you. So, and we're concerned about making sure that our customers get satisfaction in their transactions and so forth. And so, to some extent, we are concerned where you have a provision where somebody is required to do in some sort of an adhesion contract, is forced into a form where they're put at a great disadvantage or a great deal of expense to enforce their rights under their contract. So I took a shot and talked to our attorneys about how we would redraft this bill, and then took that to the work group behind you that is basically looking at 484, and we came up with almost as many questions on a simple redraft of the bill as we had with the draft. And the redraft simply said, look, if you have a consumer contract and you have a requirement that you have an out-of-state forum, you can give notice to the other party and waive that forum, and under Oregon law be required to have that forum take place in the state of Oregon or in a convenient location to you. That seemed fairly reasonable. Now, let me give you an example of some of the issues that arose as we just tried to work through that reasonable rewrite. And you heard a little bit about it. Which contracts? And every consumer contract. Well, that's a pretty broad way. I'll give you a couple of examples of what we did on that. Is there an idea of the size of a contract? If you bought a refrigerator and your arbitration was in New York City, that wouldn't make any sense. They would just, the value of the refrigerator is less than the trip to New York City. If you're buying a franchise, a consumer franchise, multi-million-dollar consumer franchise, you're represented by counsel, and you negotiate the clauses of the contract. That's a different set of circumstances than somebody that simply signs a form contract. Which provisions? Senate Bill 484 wasn't exactly clear. I think it tried to get at the location of the arbitration, but it looks like it could affect other provisions. And when you have the ability of one party to revocate a provision under state law, you have a bit of difficulty in the contracting process itself. So if we narrowed it down to simply the arbitration location, that tended to make some sense. Another question that arose is, where does this go in the statute? So as you see, 484, as it is in front of you, it's left to the drafters to cite this somewhere. Now, in the many different sections of the consumer law parts of the statute, which do not ask me any questions about because I'm unfamiliar with, but I've heard that there are different exemptions and provisions depending upon which exception you put it in. Insurance contracts have different exceptions than other types of consumer contracts. So that question would have to be looked at and parsed out. This would have to be located and any impacts decided from that point of view. The last piece I talk about here is the process of notice and compliance. From my contract experiences, it's a little difficult to simply, without really narrow confines, to give one party the right to abrogate a provision in the contract and insert some other provisions. I think it could be done. But that raised with a lot of the bar folks and other folks the unintended implications of being able to do that. Now, is that a void contract? As you spin this out, as each party in this contest now begins to have a different view, some trying to revocate the contract, some trying to impact the provision and so forth. So I have not heard the kicking it over to the Law Commission. I am somewhat in sympathy with a form of adhesion contracts which uses provisions in that contract to deny a person a right to a remedy. And I think that if the committee and Senator Przanski wanted to work on that, I think he was a little surprised, and I talked to him about the way this language came out on the last day. I mean, this certainly is not a piece of Shakespeare's best sonnets. And I think he would welcome people working on this a little bit. I talked to him about my amendments, and he said they were generally in the direction he was going. But that's going to take a work group and some time, which I think all of us would be happy to participate in, and if that's the direction you wanted to go. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Gerard.
This is for Julie. What I'm having a hard time understanding is that usually arbitration is a cheaper way of doing court costs, and for me it would appear that the consumer would benefit from that. Do you have any feel? I'm trying to understand the thrust of this bill and why it was brought about. Do you have any? Do you know what the problem was that got this going?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think it was one example. I think one. And there's been a lot of bills since this hearing, so pardon me. But I think one or two people came in and testified. I don't, and I truly try not to necessarily represent the proponents of the bill. I think what they were suggesting is this is the only contract that we can sign when we buy whatever it is. It has this binding arbitration language in it. But that's the remedy. And maybe we don't want that as the remedy. Maybe we want to go to court. I'm not doing a very good job of representing the proponents, but based on my looking at my notes before I came into this hearing, that's what I heard them say. I think it's important to note that not only is binding arbitration generally less expensive, I truly, just from my own personal experiences, our family just went through a family business divorce is the best way I can describe it. And in the disillusionment, what we decided is that there's less risk to all sides when you go to binding arbitration. There's more risk when you're in the court, because generally it sort of makes a winner and a loser. But in binding arbitration, everybody could get a little piece of something, and that's certainly the best example I have from a personal experience.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gerard, one of the people was complaining about an auto deal contract, and he refused to sign the contract, which was a standard form contract, because of the arbitration clause. The situation he raised would not really be solved by this bill in a sense, but, I mean, you want to try and go in and negotiate a separate contract for a car, either a used car or a new car, that would be pretty difficult. I do think that the gist of what people were saying is that we shouldn't be forced into a forum where we were unable to attend, or we were unable to, the cost to us would be well in excess of the value of the product we were debating. And that's one of the issues I raised, and that this bill doesn't deal with. I mean, a $5,000 consumer contract would be different from a $150,000 or $1.5 million consumer contract on certain products. Again, back to the point of whether people are represented in that discussion. If I'm brought in and sat in a room and said, sign this or you can't have your brand new pickup, it's a different contract relationship.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two issues, and I've just been sitting here listening, trying to figure all this out and what's going on, and the two things that I want to talk about are more comment than question. First of all, it's fairly clear to me that this is about small consumer issues. At Section 1, Bullet 1, defines consumer as a person who's purchasing goods for service of personal, family, and household purposes. That pretty much limits it. And then the other issue is, it seems to me, and the best solution I think I've heard isn't in this bill. It's the requirement that all arbitration be held in the county where the consumer resides. I think that's the best solution to this entire thing that I've heard.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Representative Bradley, respond to that in one sense, having done a number of arbitrations. You have to go and find an arbiter, usually an arbiter that has some knowledge in the area. Mm-hmm. And then if you do it in the county, the expense of bringing the arbiter and all of the accoutrements of arbitration to that county may outweigh, again, the cost of the small consumer good or service. And you narrowed this a little further than some examples I've heard, and that's one of the reasons I suggested a price limitation on it. So I'm not certain that it wouldn't be easier in some cases for the consumer to drive to Portland, save the cost of an overnight expense, the arbiter coming down, the rest of that, and be able to do that in a facility that the arbiter had. So those are, again, are kind of examples of even when you want to do the right thing here, we got to think through the multiple circumstances and situations that people get in.
Yeah, and the reason I use that, you weren't in the room maybe when that suggestion was made by the representative from the bar.
Yeah, I would in a sense add one more thing to looking at the location and so forth. And the choice of the arbiter, in a sense. What we really don't know on small consumer contracts, how often this provision is ever used. Those weren't the discussions in front of the committee. So again, as we narrow the bill and we change the bill, we may be creating a remedy for a problem that really doesn't exist. I mean, if you have your refrigerator that my friend just put a new dishwasher in, and they had to rip out the counter to get it out because the motor didn't work, well, what's the price? What's the battle?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may...
Representative Riley, follow up.
Thank you. And I understand what you're saying, and one of the things that I hear all the time from people who don't want something to happen is this is a problem that may not exist. And usually you're half right. It's a small number of people who are affected, but almost always there's someone who's being affected or this wouldn't be here. And I think that, you know, we need to look out for those few people just as much as we do for the majority.
No objection to that.
Chair. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gallagher and Ms. Brandeis, I'm sorry to make you have to explain your understanding of why the proponents brought this bill, but do you think it's more about which forum it is, whether it be an alternative dispute resolution or in a court, or is it more about the geography? Were the proponents more saying we don't want to have to travel out of state, or is it we don't want to be in arbitration, we want to be in court?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, I think it was the latter. I think they wanted they wanted the opportunity to choose the venue, not in terms of geography, but they didn't want to have to sign, as Mr. Gallagher said, a contract that required binding arbitration. Is that what you're understanding?
Madam Chair, yes, Representative Bonamici, and I think it really deals with what Representative Riley said. There are going to be people that object to different parts of this. One didn't want to be in arbitration, one wanted to be in court. Another wanted to be in an arbitration in a location which wasn't, they used an example of the arbitration being in a foreign forum with it very expensive. They had to do a down payment on the arbitration and so forth. So I think Representative Riley is correct. There are lots of people and lots of complaints. This 30-some lines doesn't quite cover even the exception.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony. I'd like to call up Daryl Fuller.
Is there anybody else?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller for the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association. I apologize, I wasn't here to sign up at the beginning. I left my office in a somewhat dilatorious manner and found a somewhat less convenient parking spot when I tried to get here to the committee today, and it delayed me from getting here on time. I had the opportunity to testify on the original bill on the Senate side, and we opposed the original bill, which would have prohibited binding arbitration in all contracts, not just consumer contracts. And in conversations with the chair and with the committee staff, the discussion during the public hearing originally dealt with whether or not there should be binding arbitration requirements in a contract at all, in somehow removing the right of a consumer to use the court system. But the discussion that the committee had subsequent to that was more on venue and whether or not somebody should have to go all the way to New York for binding arbitration. And so there was the discussion on Oregon-only provisions, and there was a discussion on whether it should be in the county. And there was some back and forth on, well, again, if you have a purchase in Lake County, it may be more expensive to bring an arbiter into Lake County as opposed to having the parties travel from Lake County into Eugene or Portland where there may be a qualified arbiter. The results, the amendments that you saw had nothing to do with any of the conversations I think anybody had about the bill. And it, as you said, it created an entire web of concerns that I think are apparent. One of the other things that I don't think is mentioned, again, I haven't been here for the whole time, but as you limit the contract to only consumer agreements, understand there's a downside to that, too. If Representative Gerard had bought a refrigerator for his dental office when he was practicing dentistry and he bought it with company funds, then a bill that limits itself to only household and personal use, then somebody buying it on his own credit card would have a different right or a different agreement than somebody who was buying a truck for their construction company or for their farming company or, again, a refrigerator for an office. And so I don't know how you resolve that issue other than, you know, it puts small businesses perhaps in a different position than consumers purchasing items for other purposes. We would certainly support change to the bill that would limit the venue to the state of Oregon. I would have some concerns about limiting it to the county, in that I don't believe that would be the best interests of either the consumer or the person selling the product. I made a suggestion that a lot of my colleagues behind me didn't like, which was providing a provision in there that maybe would have allowed people to participate by phone, if that would make things more convenient. And especially when you talk about people in rural parts of the state, but that caused some problems in among people that are better legal minds than I am. So I just want to let you know that we would support continuing to work on it and get a product that would solve some of the problems, but the product that we have, that you have in front of you, we believe is not a good product, and be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Gerald, thanks for being here. Do you have a copy of the bill there?
I don't, but I'm pretty familiar with it.
Well, maybe you could ask Representative Bonamici. But when I look under point 4 of section 1, do you see there where it does state that we can appear by telephone unless the judge, arbitrator, or other decision maker determines that there's good reason not to allow appearance by telephone? Who would you think the other decision maker is there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, any thoughts?
I'm curious. I mean, I think that's why this needs to be rewritten.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I suspect that language was used because you don't know if it's going to be a judge in the case of a court hearing, or if it's going to be an arbiter in case of a binding arbitration, or a mediator if they were to go. There are so many different types of forums that I assume that they were looking for a phrase that would encompass all of the people who would be in that decision-making position without limiting who they might be. Does that get close?
Well, it might be a legislator.
It could have been George Bush.
Yeah, it could have been. Anyway, I probably would have said mediator as a possibility, but yes. Who knows?
Okay, but anyway, that's one more. I just adds to your points, and thank you for being here.
Further questions for Mr. Kohler?
Thank you,
Mr. Kohler. Appreciate it. Is there anyone else that would like to weigh in on Senate Bill 484? Thank you. I think, committee, I'd like to at least get a copy of the testimony from the other side. It's curious that we have nobody here advocating for the bill, so I'd kind of like to know what the advocate side of this bill was. And so as such, I am going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 484. And with that, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 117.
Commerce Committee.
No one signed up? Okay.
Who heads Commerce Committee?
That's why it's so confusing.
I know. A lawyer.
Steve, would you give us a review of where we're at with Senate Bill 117? We've heard testimony previously on this bill. And we have an amendment, a -1 amendment that.
Thank you, Chair Holvey. Senate Bill 117, which we heard last committee meeting, expands the state no-call program and regulation of unlawful telephone solicitations to include all telephone customers of telecommunications companies. This bill was brought to you by the Attorney General's Office, and there are dash one amendments that were brought to you by Paul Cosgrove, who I believe was representing United Finance Company at the time. And
Oregon Financial Services Association.
Oh, Financial Services Association. Sorry.
So, as I recall, the Department of Justice was a proponent of the Senate Bill 117, and Mr. Cosgrove brought forward the Dash 1 Amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. Any discussion from the committee? It doesn't appear there's anyone in the audience that needs to provide any more testimony on this bill.
Mr. Chair, I just wondered, does everyone have a copy of the letter I got from Attorney General?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We all got one.
Got yes, one. We all got one.
I have some discussion.
Representative Bonamici.
One of the points that was made by the Attorney General's office was that the bill, as it's presented without the amendments, would allow for some enforcement tools, for example, the civil investigative demand and the civil penalties, that were not apparently allowed prior by just enforcing the federal law. And then when Mr. Cosgrove testified, I remember him saying that he didn't have any objection to those points. So I was hoping that they would, that the Attorney General's office and Mr. Cosgrove would come back with some sort of consensus, some sort of agreement, and I don't know if that happened or not. But it also occurred to me, and I'll give Representative Riley credit for presenting this in the way that this is just going back to enforcing the no-call program that we had previously before the FTC's no-call list, and the Attorney General previously enforced that, and then with the FTC program with the preemption, they haven't been able to enforce that, and I'm the first to admit that the FTC is not doing an adequate job of enforcing the no-call list, and so I think there's a problem that needs to get addressed, and I hope we can reinstate enforcement of our very important consumer protection law.
Thank you. Representative Girard, comments?
I would like to just kind of ditto what Representative Bonamici said. I think that we can get there with some kind of consensus here, and I was kind of hoping to do that. I kind of hated the attitude from the Attorney General's office, it's all or none, and I just think that cleaning up some definitions and taking care of this would, I think most people would come on board with this bill.
And, I looked at this bill, too, and tried to think of a way that there would be some sort of compromise in this, but it seemed like the compromise was trying to bridge over a certain group of folks that would be under this bill and giving them an exemption, and I just wasn't really sure whether that was really going to work. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm of the opinion that sometimes compromise is really just watering down what needs to be required. And I would just like to go ahead with this bill the way it was.
Well, seems like we've got all the differing points of view out. Representative Nelson.
Well, yes. I'm just wondering, talk to Representative Bonamici. On Section 3, does this not do what you were just talking about in the amendment?
Are you looking at
the amendment
or
the bill? I'm just looking at the amendment. Wondering if you think we need more than this explanation here.
Mr. Chair, can we have Mr. Scholl come back and to refresh us on what tools they would have under the original bill that they would not have under the Dash 1 Amendment? That's the
Thanks.
seems to be the important issue here.
I was just about getting ready to ask him that. Rather than asking President Bonamici her opinion, I think, which is fine to do in some settings, but in this particular setting, probably not.
Okay, I agree.
Mr. Scholl, you would introduce yourself for the record.
Absolutely. Chair Holby, members of the committee, thank you. For the record, Andrew Scholl, Assistant Attorney General, Oregon Department of Justice, Financial Fraud, Consumer Protection Section. And really quickly, if I may, since my parents live in Wichita, Kansas, I did want to concur with Mr. Chandler's statement that it's very, very hot. Rather than talking the specifics of the Dash 1 amendments, which Mr. Cosgrove may be better to speak towards, our issues, among some other lesser issues, are that the civil investigative demand is not available under the Dash 1s, which is an investigatory tool that we can use without going to court, and the civil penalties, there are not specific civil penalties, So civil penalties are very important, and they are very important that they have an impact, meaning that they're large enough that they can have an impact, particularly when you're dealing with egregious violators of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. I think I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 117.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we send Senate Bill 117A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves Senate Bill 117A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Mr. Riley, would you call the roll?
This is on the bill?
On the bill.
Aye.
And no. No.
Aye.
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 Senate Bill 117, having received the required majority votes, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I serve notice of a minority report.
Representative Gerard serves notice of a minority report. So noted. With that, I'll close work session on Senate Bill 117.
Need a carrier?
We could probably explain it better than the rest of us.
Can we have the G team?
I'm going to carry this one.
No. Chair will carry the bill.
Oh. We've got to go without getting on it. So.
Right. Close the work session. Adjourn the committee on House.